Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Veterans in Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. I'm your host, Mike DeSop, and here we explore the stories and insights from the military veteran and supporter communities who are leading the way for vets in agribusiness, ag tech, and agripreneurship. We swap stories, talk ag, and show how the grassroots nature of the ag community can be a natural fit for the military veteran. Today's guest is Juan Whiting, president of the Hinterland Institute, fourth-generation farmer and rancher, and Army Reserve Civil Affairs Officer. Juan has a master's degree in international development, and prior to the Hinterland Institute and his consulting work at Stray Acres, he spent 8 years in East Africa working on a regenerative ag movement. Today, Juan is on a mission, a new mission, to transform how we steward 26 million acres of Department of Defense land. Juan isn't just talking about giving veterans a hobby farm or a soft landing. As he puts it, quote, "We don't need to bring just young people into agriculture. We need to bring young people in that can actually get the job done," end quote. In this episode, you'll hear how Juan and his team are building partnerships with base commanders, regenerative producers, and veterans to regenerate rangelands, feed troops from local installations, and develop the next generation of what they call regenerates, veterans trained and equipped to manage the land regeneratively. This is a bold vision for national security, rural revival, and veteran opportunity, all rolled into one. Let's get into it.
Most of my background has kind of fallen in the realms of where how we utilize our land and how we connect young people to the land. And so that's been a big piece of Hinterland Institute and what we're going to talk about today. So, yeah.
And you're still in the reserves, is that correct?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that's that's relevant to what we're talking about. But yeah, I'm in the Army Reserves as a civil affairs officer, and I'm an agricultural specialist as a 38 Golf.
Interesting. Okay. So the Hinterland Institute, I'm somewhat familiar with it, but I've never heard you describe it. And there may be listeners who aren't familiar with it. Tell us what that institute is and what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Yeah. So the Hinterland Institute is really was created to build a bridge, both with the military and the producers that are near these the DOD land that a lot of them are by. And so there's 26 million acres right now that is owned by the Department of Defense. And our goal at Hinterland Institute is to regenerate that land, to bring stewards to that land and to, you know, effectively use it and manage it and create an opportunity there. So that's really what we're all about. We're bringing in veterans to do that job. And this was initially, I mean, you had Eric Chaya on your podcast, and this is the funny thing is that afterwards, that's when we got connected. And so you've been really instrumental in, you know, creating some of these collaborations. So kudos to you and this podcast. But yeah, when we started talking to Eric, he's already been piloting this with the Naval Postgraduate School. We're taking this and we're going to be replicating this across the nation. And, you know, the way that we're doing it is we're not pushing producers off the land. We're working alongside them and enabling them to benefit from, you know, regenerative practices. You know, that's going to include natural credits, which is, you know, water credits, biodiversity credits, and carbon credits, and also benefit from having young, skilled and motivated labor, which is coming from the veteran side. And that's really the focus of what we're doing right now, which is the training program itself.
Okay. Had you had this idea before? And if so, where did it originate?
So I've had, I would say it would, the idea kind of, it really originates from us wanting to replicate what had been done with Argol, which,
got it.
Yeah, and that was where it started. I think for myself, why I was passionate about it was, you know, in Africa, I'd seen a lot of land that was owned by, you know, both on the private side and by the government. And we just said, hey, there's a lot of young people that need jobs. And this is very similar to that. I've always been motivated, not by owning land, but by managing it and stewarding it. And I think that there's a lot of young people that feel the same way, that yes, we'd like to own our huge ranches, but really we just want an opportunity to be part of this movement. And I think a lot of young guys feel that same way.
How are the lands around these DoD installations managed today? And why would they benefit from transitioning to a more regenerative approach?
Well, that's a great question. I think that, and it really depends. That's like the short answer. What we're seeing is that there's been hesitation in the past, and this isn't this has changed a lot over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. But there are some bases that are much more open to grazing, and they've worked alongside producers. But there's been a lot that have said, we don't want anyone here. There's been sometimes environmentalists that have been worried about certain species being, you know, harmed or affected. And, you know, the management has been very stressful. So, I mean, it's easy to kind of point fingers and blame the bases for not allowing, you know, those cycles to exist in an ecosystem that, you know, obviously there were ruminants before. But what we're seeing is that the ones that have stopped using livestock, there has been obviously more pressures of, you know, fire loads and risks with fire. There's been more erosion. So we're talking to Fort Benning. We're seeing a lot of erosion there, which immediately affects any kind of military exercises, trying to drive a tank through and getting it stuck because you're not managing the soil properly. That directly affects, you know, our mission with the military. And so we're seeing that. We're also seeing endemic species of weeds that just, you know, start going crazy. And we can manage that a lot better. And that's kind of what the purpose of our discussions with a lot of these base commanders. And the exciting thing with the last, I just had a discussion with the base commander over in San Luis Obispo where we're grazing, and he was saying, you don't understand like how much we've saved because we're not using the fire department to do controlled burns. We don't have the erosion. We have, we're able to manage the land a lot better. And in cases of like where I'm at here in Utah, the biggest thing is water. How do we bring water back? How do we improve the environment and make it so that this isn't just a complete, you know, sandy desert? And that's something that they're very interested in.
So does the DoD manage the contracts for grazing of the lands that surround their base in some kind of buffer perimeter? Or is it totally producer or landowner dependent?
So that's where it completely depends. It's going to be, if you're inside the DoD land, that's they're managing those yep. leases, and those all look different. And this has been something new for me, and you have to get Deb on a call to like dive really deep into this. Cause I rely on her, and her expertise. Cause she really, she's able to work alongside some of our partners like Texas A&M, or, you know, Georgia State. And I mean, we're able to work with some of our university partners to create a contract in some cases. In other cases, it's very open. Like here in Utah, there's a little bit more flexibility. But from what I'm learning is that every base, every state is completely different. And the needs are different, right? I mean, that just makes sense.
Right. Like in a place where Eric is operating in Camp San Luis Obispo, I would imagine fire load is a huge concern, mm-hmm. but perhaps in places surrounding bases around Utah, you're more worried about erosion and sort of regeneration.
Desertification.
Desertification. Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
So is the are you guys thinking about Eric's program? And for listeners, our goal, regenerative grazing, open air lab.
Open air lab. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Are you thinking about his program as a pilot or a model, and then taking that and replicating it in Camp Roberts, for example, or places in Utah? I mean, what are the thoughts around that, how it expands?
So we're just about to close, and I have my fingers crossed, but when I was out there, we were very close to closing with Camp Roberts, and we just applied for a REPI grant there.
What kind of grant?
It's called a REPI funding grant. So this is funding from DOD that it's focused on environmental conservation.
Okay.
And that's
Interesting.
something that we look into. I mean, a lot of what we do in the beginning stages is it's going to be like, how do we restore and repair this land? And so there may not be a lot of productivity or efficiency as far as an operation's concerned. So this is where, as we bring in veterans, we're going to have to train them not just on like how do you graze cattle, but how do we graze them in a way that restores the environment, even if that means that it's not operationally efficient, as far as like the ranching's concerned. And it's a different way of looking at it.
With we talked about Camp Roberts and where Eric is now. How are you guys thinking about expanding? Like, what are you planning on just building out from where Eric is now, or do you have a plan to take this to strategic places first for various reasons?
That's so it's happened very organic. We're already in discussions. We're getting close to closing on Fort Benning, which is in Georgia, not even close to what where we're at, but we're building partnerships with regenerative partners like White Oak Pastures, and they're going to we're currently fundraising and supporting them in building a lodge where we'll be able to train veterans in these hubs. And so what I envision and what the team envisions is having hubs in California, potentially in Utah, some of these areas where the ecosystems are going to be very different. Obviously California, the hilly areas and the more Mediterranean climate is going to be completely different from Arizona and Utah desert type climates. And then you've got the Southeast where Will Harris is, and we want him to be able to share that knowledge and work with the veterans to be able to prepare them for working out at Camp Stewart. Or sorry, I'm saying Camp, yeah, Fort Stewart and Fort Benning.
First of all, I was really impressed that you guys got that partnership with White Oaks. How'd that come about?
I mean, all of this has kind of been, I don't know. I'm trying to remember how that all worked out. We've been in discussion for a pretty long time about this, and Will is very humble in his approach, and the thing that was really inspiring is he's not trying to go global with his approach. He's really saying this works here, and I'm good at what I do here in Bluffton, Georgia. But if we can come to him and really build on his the thing that really inspires me about what he does is that it's very focused on people, and that rural community that he's developed is just absolutely inspiring. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough with hinterland. A lot of these rural communities that we're going to be working in and bringing military families, well, veteran families out to, they are more or less dying. I mean, rural America it's pretty beat up, and we're talking a lot about that with a lot of these organizations, and they're saying, look, if you can bring opportunities out there, there's plenty of guys that are ready to get out of the city. They're tired of it, and if you're a veteran, you're not, a lot of these guys, yeah, they've gone into tech or they've gone into finance, but are they really happy? You know, most of us went into the military because it was hands-on, it was outside, and it was, you know, it was changing every day. And I think that's something that you and I have talked about before, but that's something that is very unique to agriculture as well.
Does a guy like Will understand those sort of more intangible skills that veterans bring, or have you had to sort of educate?
Yeah, well, that was initially what the discussion was. I mean, Will said, okay, could you bring some veterans? We'll take any of them. Like he was just saying, I mean, this is, Will and Jenny have both been extremely supportive of the idea of just having veterans working for them. And okay, so when we talked about the program, they were all in and they wanted to be a part of it.
So how is Hinterland structured, and how would it, let's use the White Oak Pastures as an example. How would Hinterland facilitate that sort of internship, if you will, or employment mm-hmm. with a regenerative practice like what Will's doing?
So the way that we work right now, and this is, you know, we're still building this out, but Hinterland Institute is a nonprofit.
Okay.
But what our real goal is to be training the next generation of land stewards, and we're calling them regenerates. So this was Angela's idea. I love it. But yeah, so these are guys that, guys and gals, that are able to work on much larger scale, pieces of land. And what, when we're working with someone like Will right now, obviously Will is, we're working with him for training purposes, not okay. just to obviously have interns on his farm. It's more of to have him training these guys, these new guys that understand, just to understand how it works, especially in the Southeast. So these hubs are going to be like training areas for the veterans. But if we were to work with someone that, you know, watched Yellowstone and decided to buy 100,000 acres, and now they're like, holy cow, I don't know what I've got myself into. We would work with them and develop a plan. And it's going to be different for everyone. But if they're wanting us to fully manage it, then in that case, we kind of become an operation where we're basically sending employee, what would we call it? Like we're almost like a farm or a ranch management company yes. at that point. Yeah. And they can fall back on us for research purposes, or like if they need if we need to bring in third party monitoring evaluation people so that they can access some of these natural credits, or, you know, or our research partners with universities, that's an opportunity for them. Now, in the case of working with producers near these military lands, it's a little bit different. And this is something that really is near and dear to my heart, that a lot of these producers do not have the capacity to fund labor, right? They're okay. doing it all on their own, which is a very different story than those guys that are using, you know, their land as a tax shelter, more or less. So if we work with them, oftentimes we're going to be offsetting the money that we bring in will probably even out and balance the money that we put into just having these guys working out with these producers and helping them expand with the land around the DOD land that we access with Hinterland. So, you know, Hinterland becomes a more or less a bridge for those producers to access more land. We may bring additional livestock and that potentially brings in profit, or we might just help. We will be helping them increase their profitability because, like I said, they access those natural credits. We're going to help them access. We're going to help them access a better market, obviously, with the regenerative market. And this is where it gets really interesting, Mike, because we are working with From the Farm, and we're working on developing a direct market with the military. So our goal will be to have like these closed loop systems that, you know, it's all about national security. How do we feed our troops with the land that's already there? And if we can create those systems and figure out the logistics and distribution and everything with from the farm, then we're great. I'm sitting here with, you know, these are MREs right here. This is a regenerative MRE from Essential Provisions, another organization that we've partnered with. I think that you're going to see a lot of partnerships that along the chain that we build that are all focused on regenerative practices. You know, some of it's for the environment, some of it's for the health of the veterans and the military personnel.
Lots of stuff there.
Yeah.
I'm not the first one to have this idea. You and I have talked about it. I've talked about it with Eric. I think I've talked about it with Alan and maybe Roger. But this idea of not just better managing the land around DoD facilities, but also then using what's managing that land as a food source for the installation has all sorts of benefits around resiliency and nutritional improvement. One of the guests that I've had on, gosh, it's been a few months now, Kara Rutter, who's doing kind of an agritourism operation in South Carolina, I think, spent years as a food cook and worked at various stages of kind of procurement and stuff. She has described that as somewhat of a challenge with some of these long-term contracts that installations have with these providers. So I'm wondering if you've faced that sort of resistance already as you started to broach this idea of using, in this case, cattle as a protein source for the troops, or if it's been much more receptive than maybe it's been kind of touted as.
Yeah, I mean, people are receptive, but like you're saying, I mean, there's definitely long-term contracts that are there and companies that are just, you know, the Army trusts them or the military trusts them.
Right.
We realize this is going to be an uphill battle. But what's really exciting, like I was showing you those MREs, and I'm going to have to, I'll be referring you to these guys because you have to get them on to talk about this, because I know I'm not the only one that is just tired of MREs. This is different. I mean, you're talking about bison stew, lentil soups. Like, it's a different ball game.
Is it a veteran-owned business?
It's not. No.
Are they at a place where they could fill scale that's required by the military?
That's where we have to start looking into things, because that's obviously not right now. They're already sourcing special forces units. And so that's where it's kind of an easy one to get in to at the beginning.
Right. They've almost got their own procurement channels, do they not?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but you know, long-term we have to scale. This is the problem with regenerative agriculture in general, is that when they come out with exciting products like this, their biggest problem is like, we can't source enough. And that's where we can fill that gap. Obviously, I'd be a little bit nervous about having a bunch of bison on any of these installations. But I mean, you know, when you're talking about a private landowner that buys hundreds of thousands of acres, you could probably jump into bison. I mean, that could be something. But that's where I think we can do that closed loop model. We are looking at this, you know, for the long haul. It's going to take probably 5 to 10 years before we are able to nail down some of those contracts, but it could come a lot faster. I mean, with this administration, a lot of things are changing, and we're talking to a lot of people in DC that are excited about this. And so the biggest thing is, I think that change is coming, and we're seeing it. I don't know exactly how quickly it's going to happen, but I think that it's, like you said, it's a super exciting opportunity to see those closed loops.
Absolutely.
And get food from the base. I think the biggest thing that kills me is that we talk about DOGE, and I think the biggest waste that we talk about, or that we can talk about in the United States, is the waste of land. And I'm not talking about being extractive or anything like that, I think that it's wasted potential. Our goal is really to motivate the land to reach its potential. And I think the veterans that we train through our program will be able to do that.
You're describing this role that hinterland sounds like it's filling that's multifaceted, mm-hmm. right? You've got DOD installations who in some cases are responsible for and other cases are affected by the land that surrounds their installations in super large quantities, right? So there's an engagement opportunity there with the base establishments to improve and optimize that land. It can become a food source, perhaps. There's an opportunity for those lease owners or managers of perhaps that independent land that surrounds the bases to benefit from a bridge that you would bring for the base and then the kind of land steward. And then even in places like what Will is doing at White Oak Pasture, saying, we've got a talent pool that is interested in participating in and learning the kinds of skills that you specialize in. And so if we can bring those talent to you, you become a training source or a hub like you've described. And then it sounds like eventually hinterland becomes not just regional hubs and bridges, but also your own curriculum perhaps, or your own training funnel to bring these guys directly out of the service into your training entity and then out into these kind of regenerative places and situations. Is that somewhat of an accurate characterization?
Yeah. Well, and I think that we do have our own training program, and it is going to be unique. It has to be, right? So when we're talking about ecosystems, I think that the Savory Institute and the trainings that are out there, we're not trying to replicate those. In fact, we're using a lot of the people that are on our advisory board, and the people that are going to be part of these trainings are part of these institutes, right? They're part of the ongoing work that's with Noble Research Institute.
Yeah.
Everyone's teaching the same kind of thing. I know they like to. The big thing for us is that we're going to have to tailor something. We have to tailor a program that meets the needs of the base at the same time. How do we maintain the relationships with the base commander and meet his goals and align with the mission of the base? Because it's great if you can manage the rangeland, but if people are going to be shooting on the range and you haven't overgrazed it, which is the goal, like we need to overgraze certain areas so that we can manage that fire risk, which would not be ideal for any pasture, but on the firing range, it makes complete sense.
Right, right.
And in some cases, there's other things that we need to focus on. And the goal is developing relationships with the producers. It's developing relationships with. So I think that oftentimes I'm looking at it, we're putting my civil affairs hat on, and we're just developing some relationships with the locals and that indigenous population. And sure. And that's what we're doing with the base. And I think that that's going to be a core element in the work that we do. It's been a core element with what Eric does. I mean, you won't believe how many meetings he has with the environmental teams and trying to help them understand why it's important and how it's like maybe saving the turtles and getting them out and doing all of these field days with people when he could just be focusing on grazing, right? Yeah. Nobody's paying you extra for doing these field days, but they are important. Like being able to get the buy-in from the base commander, he's developed some serious relationships there. That's why his model, and that's why he's really, it's this partnership with Naval Postgraduate School that Hinterland has is so, I mean, it's a critical part to our mission, because we can take all of that knowledge that's been developed over the past year and a half and take that and start replicating it elsewhere.
Right. How big of an opportunity are we potentially talking about here at Camp Roberts?
Camp Roberts, we're talking potentially another 20,000 acres.
And what's Eric doing now?
Huh?
How big is Eric managing now?
Right now, I think we're about 1,200 acres.
That's right. Okay.
Right.
This is almost 10x what he's running.
Right. And we've got a lot of private land around it, and we've got some fantastic partners over at Agland Trust
Yeah,
that have
great.
just been, and this is where I think the most exciting thing for us, being a nonprofit, we're able to work with other nonprofits and build this bridge. And there's a lot less skepticism because we come in to the talking to the military bases, and a lot of these there's a lot of conservation type nonprofits that we're working with here in Utah as well that just say, I think you guys could open some doors for us to get more land. They want to get more land, but their problem is that they just want to let it, like they want to get that land and then they don't want anyone to work it. But when we tell them that we're regenerating it through livestock, they're totally fine. They look at it and they say, okay, so you mean you have the same goals that we have? And we say not only do we have the same goals, but we're incentivized to increase biodiversity, to improve water cycles, and to bring carbon into the soil. Like, so all the things that you want, we want it even more. So that's a lot of,
Are you like having to overcome this sort of established thought that, livestock are in fact part of the problem rather than the solution? Is that a common misconception you deal with?
In California, obviously that's always going to be a thing. You have environmentalists that are sometimes attached to the base that it takes time. And I think that this, like I said, goes back to kind of civil affairs thinking, like how do we win hearts and minds? And the only way I see that we can do it is by bringing them out and showing them the veterans working with the livestock, showing them the difference, right? The crazy showing them the cost savings has been an insane one. The base commanders are all about that. But then if you show them the grasses and you show them the turkeys, like we had, there's hundreds of turkeys and they're
Eric's talked
huge.
about them before.
Yeah, but they can't hunt. So I mean, I just was watching them and I'm like sitting there drooling and it's they're everywhere.
You talked about these management practices being dependent upon the conditions, obviously, of the base. And I think about the holistic management approach that the Savory Institute has been developing for decades now. And I'm wondering whether there's an opportunity to come together with them as a training. It's in somewhat of the same ways that you're thinking about things with Will. Is there a Savory Institute cycle or part of the curriculum potentially that could sit at or in partnership with the hinterland so that as these veterans come in, they go through your kind of distinct training for DoD management, but then they also get the sort of tried and tested holistic management approach with a Savory group, and then they can go into a Savory hub somewhere or they could go to some of these different bases. Have you begun to explore maybe what that might look like with a group like the
Like
Savory
Savory
Institute?
Institute. Yeah. And we're still exploring that. I think that they'd be a perfect partner. I think that as long as we, one of the biggest challenges that I see with some of these training programs is that there's this very protective, there's a goal obviously to say we're different from everyone else. Because otherwise your training program doesn't have a lot of value. And I understand that. It's kind of like a book or any kind of research. If you need to protect your research, otherwise it doesn't have a lot of value and other people can steal it. But we really want to make sure that we're kind of agnostic in our approach because and agnostic and very flexible. Not that we're saying that anyone's wrong, but I think that we do want to work with multiple training programs. I think that
Got it.
Will does an amazing job in creating this just his social ecosystem is phenomenal. And the way that he integrates other animals and there's a lot there. And obviously he's focused on the Southeast. And I think that he makes a great point where he's like, look, I'm an expert on Bluffton and this area in Georgia. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on Utah, and I'm not even going to try and tell you what to do in Utah. Whereas there's other institutes that are like, I'll tell you what you can do anywhere in the world. And I think you got to have a balance, right? We've got to have people that are, and I think the Savory Hubs is a good way to do that. And we would love to connect with them and find an ideal way of integrating our training through that, because I think the hub model makes sense, because you've got the hubs. I think we got a hub here in Utah as well, which would make it ideal. But going also to the training part, this training, you know, the way that we envision it, it's got to be like a military training. And I think that's, I think when I say that, all the veterans are like, yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, there's immediate feedback. You're told when you suck, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a challenge there, and there's a lot of, this is something that most of these training programs don't have. They're kind of softer. And I think we want to challenge these guys, and we want to really show that this is the next mission for America. Like, how do we saddle up and get everyone on board with a mission to regenerate 26 million acres? I don't think that's going to come from being soft and saying, here, you can consult and, you know, just ask questions. Like, I think we need to tell people when they suck. And I think as veterans, this is the thing we miss with the civilian trainings, is that we never are told when we suck. We just are told when we're doing a good job. And
if your target audience for talent is the veteran community, I think that's a very appropriate approach.
Yeah.
I'm getting the thought that these sort of hubs in the Savory structure are oftentimes geographic places or, you know, research institutes, et cetera. But the thought here may be that hubs become installations. Mm-hmm. If you're focusing on that 26 million acres, then those hubs should likely be positioned around installations that are ready to improve those 26 million acres. And then you've also got the talent pool right next door, essentially.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Ken Smith from the Savory Institute about this?
We haven't. Okay. I say I haven't. Eric or Angela might have already talked to him.
Okay.
So we're all kind of talking to people at the same time. And I know that we have talked to the Savory Institute before.
Okay.
And so I don't know where that conversation's gone to this point.
All right. If you chat internally with Eric and Angela, and if it makes sense, Ken is a great guy. He's been on the show before. Eric, another colleague of mine, Ken and Alan spent some time on the phone together a month or two ago now to sort of iron out what this thing might look like.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of, I think, before a lot of the progress that you've made in the last couple of months with the Hinterland Institute. So Ken and one of the Savory Institute sort of marketing outreach partnership guy would be the two that I would want to link you guys up with. But your thoughts about making that program as sort of agnostic and perhaps veteran focused, I think is a really important distinction.
I think so too. I think that the problem that I see with a lot of these veteran programs is they're not run by veterans, right? Like, that's just
a fair critique.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a critique that I've seen this with a lot of the nonprofits, that it's great. The problem is that we start approaching it like veterans are victims, that instantly turns people off. And then we start approaching it like, hey, they'd have no idea how to function in the civilian world, which we often don't, because it's much more high speed and we can get things done. We can do the impossible, right? And I think that's what we have to have, that mindset when we're taking on millions of acres. We have to have these guys that are just like, they don't know what they can't do.
Right.
You know, like too many people that are like, oh, that's way too much land. But we can get them the tools and the equipment and the funding and give them all that they need. And these are the kind of guys that, you know, when they're 19 years old, they're leading troops into combat.
Yeah. Right.
Like, don't tell me you can't do it. These guys are, that's really where we need to, you know, and I think that that's something that it reminds me of, like Shackleton's, that when he put out that recruiting.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the newspaper, and is like, hey, we're looking for men that, you know, might not make it back.
Right.
very extremely cold, horrible conditions, you know, limited rations. Yeah, I think that that's not that we're wanting to have them suffer. Like there is, this will be well paid, and we want it to be paid more than other ranch management positions.
But there's a grit to it that
Yeah,
is attractive.
exactly. I mean, we need some of the most gritty and, just the toughest individuals to be part of this,
Right.
men and women. And it could be, a veteran spouse as well. Like, I don't, we don't, we're not, we don't care. We just want them to have that ability to deploy to some of these places that are, some of them are in the middle of nowhere. And then we want them to be able to make something and nothing. And I think that's, I think people don't talk about that. They talk about how we need to bring young people into agriculture. You don't just need to bring young people into agriculture. You need to bring young people that can actually get the job done. And that's a different story. We can't just bring a bunch of tech bros into agriculture and expect that they're going to be running a full farm. Like, you have to have that ability to, that resilience and ability to withstand some storms.
The obvious structure to me to sort of link these is the Skills Bridge program. How are you guys? What do you think about that?
We are SkillBridge. We're able to do
You are.
SkillBridge. So we have
Wonderful.
two SkillBridge
Okay.
guys right now that are being trained,
Okay.
and I think we're bringing on a third. We have not been promoting it as we should, and we're going to be running a campaign called Operation Open Range here next
Okay.
week, and this is going to be building off of the Veteran Business Resource Center's Boots to Business program. We're just an extension of that, and it's going to be all hands-on, boots on the ground work. And there's the skill bridge, and then we take it another level to an apprenticeship that will be run through California. We're already set up with that as well as one that we'll be setting up here in Utah.
Got it. Okay.
So going
And
back to what you were talking about with Savory Institute, if we can find a hub here in Utah,
yeah.
I mean, we'd love to connect with them and find a, something that we can work with the Savory Institute together on. I think the big thing is that we have to be able to control how we, how effective this is at reaching the needs of our veterans to prepare them for a much larger mission. This isn't us training them to be consultants. We're training them to be regenerates.
That's a great point, right? The outcome product has to sort of be somewhat distinct and tailored for your austere needs, perhaps, but your kind of scalability, so to speak, that doesn't necessarily isn't always the same output product that a Savory Institute hub might put forth.
Yeah, there's just a more that's required of these guys, and I think that's where we are tailoring something different. But like I said, I'm not, we want to take the best from every program.
And you've got two now with a third on the way. Are you actively looking for more veterans to come in through this program?
We
Okay.
are, and we're recruiting. We want to be, anyone who's listening to this that's thinking about, could I do this? And this is obviously the ideal. If we can get guys that are just coming right out of the military, SkillBridge, you can use that. But the fundraising that we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks is only for this program. It's to help cover the lodging. It's to help cover some of the basic needs of these guys when they're out training and prepping for this mission. So that's really what we're doing. And I, in the meantime, we're just building a pool of potential candidates that can manage hundreds of thousands of acres. And there's going to be a lot of roles that need to be filled. And that's, yeah, we, like I said, the biggest thing for us right now is that there's more land than we can handle. There's bases that are ready for us to be out there, and we're going to need more people than we originally thought we would need. I mean, eventually there's going to be thousands of veterans that we need to place.
Are you looking for any particular kind of veteran at this point?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're looking for veterans that are very self-motivated and capable of managing hundreds of thousands of acres and what that means. Like, obviously, you know, we're looking for good people that are also able to maintain relationships with both producers and with the bases and the people on. So you have to be pretty versatile. You can't just be like this introvert that doesn't ever get out of his shell. And I think there are a lot of people that are like, I want to go get land and get away from people. This probably won't be, you know, the best gig for you. There obviously be potentially there'll be positions where we could just, you know, hide you in the background. But I think there'll be more than enough opportunity to do that. But I think the people that are really leading, we'll need them to be interacting both
Got it.
with government. People are very interested in it. I mean, we've had senators coming out, we've had generals coming out and seeing what's going on, and they're talking to Eric. This is going to be happening all over. Anywhere we go, people are like, why is this happening? What are you doing? Why are you moving the cows so much? The cowboys are watching it and saying, wait, you're using a whistle to get the cows to come to you? And it's a little bit bothersome because it makes them look like, you know, it makes them look bad. When Eric has his daughter whistle and they all move up the hill, and they used to use five cowboys to get those cows up the hill. But we're just showing them that it's a better way. I mean, that we're stewarding and we're treating the livestock with respect. But going back to your question, we are looking for guys and gals. I got to keep saying, you know, it's
I
new.
understand what you mean.
But we want people that we can. They can handle that kind of pressure. There's a lot of land there, and there's going to be a lot of pressure in that sense. We will be giving them all the back support that we can, and they'll be having consultants to fire off questions and to do this. But and all the equipment that they need, whether that's like, you know, collars that help us have that you know, extra barrier of support. But I think I'll tell you what we aren't looking for. We aren't looking for people that are just looking for a job, right? That's, you know, a lot of that's something that, you know, I've talked to my team a lot about, is that we have to be really careful that when we talk about veterans, that we don't bring in victims, right? Because there's a lot of, you know, veteran programs out there that's what they're for, and that's okay. But we need people that are, you know, they're a couple notches above what civilians could do, and that are able to manage ranches that are much larger scale than most of the ranches that you're seeing out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's important to set those kind of expectations at the beginning so that it makes your job easier. You and I were talking a little bit before about a Salt Lake Community College initiative that you're working on right now. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Utah's been a, I mean, it was unexpected. I live here in Utah, but the Veteran Business Resource Center, which is the only one in the United States, they've been extremely supportive, connecting us to the governor's office, connecting us to the bases out here, Hill Air Force Base, helping us build a partnership with Salt Lake Sentinel Landscape, and that. What that really opens the door to is about 2.4 million acres. And there's lots of producers that are suffering and trying to keep their ranches alive and their legacy alive, but their kids aren't coming back to work the land. And so, you know, all of this is kind of open doors here in Utah, but the VBRC, the Veteran Business Resource Center, has enabled us to partner with them. And they had this Boots to Business program, which many of the veterans that listen here are going to be aware of and maybe we're a part of. We're going to be an extension of the Boots to Business program. And we're going to be joint fundraising over the next couple of weeks with Operation Open Range. And the goal of that is to bring on the best candidates to be part of this program. And that program will be like, initially several months getting that training, and then go on to the actual apprenticeship and being eventually deployed to start regenerating this land.
Got it. Okay. So funding is priority. It
this stage. Veterans is a priority at this stage. Partnerships in hubs around military installations with training entities. If any of these folks are listening, Juan, that fit within any of these categories or need profiles, how do they get in touch?
I'll be sending you a link. Okay. There's a form that they can fill out, and it'll go directly to our program officer, who will then, you know, start. We'll start having interviews. And okay. Honestly, if you can do the skill bridge, that'd be great. That eases things for our program. But I want to make sure that I can bring on just the best people, and that's what I'm fundraising for, both with grant funding and direct donors. I mean, we've got some exciting people that are working with us. Will Harris is one of them, but I mean, we've got Michael Peterson, who was a country star, who's going to be doing a veteran album and donating all the tickets that he sells for his veteran concerts, that'll go to this program to support veterans. And we'll be doing an announcement with him here in a week or two. And, you know, we've got tons of partners that, you know, Alejandro Carrillo and all these other partners that are just ready. They're ready to start just getting the work done. And so there's no limit to the land, and there's no limit to how many veterans want to do this. I think you and I know this. Like, every time I've gone to training, I've found just hundreds of veterans that come to me and like, how do I get into agriculture? And I was going to say this, and I didn't say it before, but if you haven't been in agriculture, that's not a disqualifier at all. Like, and I know that that's crazy. That might seem crazy to say when we're talking about hundreds of thousands of acres, but if you are a leader and you're able to learn, I mean, it's like any other veteran or any other military training program. We don't expect you to know. In fact, we might have to have you unlearn things if you were in ag before. That was the case for me. I was in, you know, ag before, long before, and I had to unlearn most of the things I learned.
Yeah. Where does the Center for Ag Resilience fit into this partnership?
Oh, so CFAR is going to be doing the trainings. Like, that's
got it.
So we will set up the lodge there in Bluffton, and right next to all of the operations there, and these guys will be there for a period of time. And if they're actually going to be grazing at you know, Fort Benning or Fort Stewart, they will probably be there for a much longer time and be learning how to manage that kind of ecosystem.
Okay. The selfish part of me wants to know, Juan, if you guys have talked to any of the base installations with the Marine Corps.
Yes. Yeah. And that's ongoing. I mean, we have Miramar, which we're working with now.
Awesome.
And then Yuma, which is already, Alejandro's already working out there. And we are looking into, you know, how do we continue that? And the Marine Corps is, that one's a little bit more tricky than the Army for us, but I think that those discussions will be ongoing, and we'll see where it goes. But I think we're excited to see more of those bases. I'd like to see Pendleton and 29 Palms. Those are both, you know, big on our list, and they're, you know, the Savory Institute's interested in that as well. We've talked to them about that.
Why are they trickier, the Marine Corps?
Well, I think that there's just a lot of environmentalists that have been focused on species. Like, that one is one that that I think there were conversations in the past, and it might have been involving turtles or other things.
At 29 pounds. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So okay. We don't want cows stepping on them. I don't know how we.
Understood. I remember that.
Deal with that.
Understood. Well, Juan, man, look, it's been great catching up with you. Yep. I'm so excited about what you guys are doing, the progress that you've made, the team that's surrounding you, the partnerships that you've put in place. You know that you've got my support in whatever capacity you think is helpful. I'm happy to do other members of the Hinterland Institute team if Deb or Angela at some point want to come on and chat.
Love jumping on. I think
Okay.
there, so Deb, you're going to get like a very in-depth, like how are we working with these bases and what does that look like? It might be like just over people's heads, but it's interesting. And then Angela has very much like the vision for how that training program is evolving, and it's quickly evolving. And I think she has a very clear vision for that. Most of my
Amazing.
work, and if there's partners that are listening, most of my work is developing these partnerships so that we're not reinventing the wheel. Like you said, why not work with Savory Institute? Why not work with the approach that I take is if there's an opportunity, we're not just going to pass it by. There's just too much land for us to be like selfish and say we don't need to work with anybody. That's why we're working with producers. It's why we're open to working with the military on things, and I think that the more partnerships, the better. As long as they align with the vision and are able to handle it, we're on board with them.
Well, look, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure we highlight?
No, I think that we will also be. I'll put out a link here. That if you know people that want to sponsor or donate to this program specifically, this is going directly to the veterans, which opens the doors for this land can't be managed. We can't say, hey, we're gonna work on 200,000 acres if we don't have, these veterans ready to go. And that's really why my focus and my work is important, because we have to be fundraising to bring on these veterans and make it worthwhile, not just for them, but their families. A big part of, and Angela is passionate about this, but a big part of what we want to do is ensure that this is family oriented. The military doesn't do a great job of this, but we want to make sure that families are a part of this. If they have to do homeschool, or if there's like, we want to have programs that support that, both the people that are working the land that are employed by us, but also the families, and ensure that like that's a stable environment that they can heal. And there's obviously a lot of healing when you're outside and working in this industry, but it can also be just as damaging as the military on your mental health.
That wraps up this episode of the Vets and Ag Podcast with Juan Whiting. What the Hinterland Institute is doing is more than just a feel-good story. It's a framework for using veteran grit, Department of Defense land, and regenerative practices to rebuild our food and security systems from the ground up. Juan reminded us that agriculture isn't just about access, it's about capability. They don't need token veterans or tech bros who want the aesthetic of farming. They need men and women who can take the hits, adapt, and deliver results on the land the same way that they did in uniform. If Juan's vision resonated with you, please reach out to him and the Hinterland Institute at hinterlandinstitute.com. That's HINTERLAND institute.com, or find him on LinkedIn. Whether you're a veteran, a base commander, or a producer looking to partner on rangeland regeneration, this is your call to action.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vets and Ag Podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. If you enjoyed this episode and think other military veterans and supporters would benefit from these insights and stories, please give us a review and share on social media. You can also find previous episodes and learn more about AGD Consulting by visiting our website. Finally, if you have any recommendations of future guests who are military veterans or supporters leading the way in agribusiness, ag tech, or agripreneurship, please send them our way. I'm your host, Mike DeSa, and until next time, stay frosty.